This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I hope you all enjoyed the holiday season. Now that it's officially over, we can get going with the NBA regular season. I am your co-host, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by my co-host, Adam Murray.
Happy 2016.
Happy 2016. Did you have any New Year's resolutions that you've broken yet?
No. Those are pointless, and those are just a waste of time to pretend to do something and, oh, let me go start something new. And, you know, New Year's is a Friday, so who starts something new on a Friday? And it's like, well, I'm going to start my New Year's resolutions on Monday the 4th.
Yeah, that's the real New Year. And then you start delaying in, and then you get to February and you totally forgot what your resolution was.
Exactly.
Any resolutions that, I mean, we gave out enough gifts and enough, like, wishes for all the, during our Christmas episode for all the NBA teams. Do you have any kind of New Year's resolution for any NBA team or NBA player so far?
Just let's just have good basketball, because Christmas was just an overall disappointment, wasn't it?
Well, all the games were very slow and plodding. Even the Spurs, who lost to the Rockets, the final score is 88-84. I mean, neither team really got going, and the main event, even though it wasn't the last game, but it was the game on ABC that everyone was looking forward to watching, got a good rating, was the rematch of the NBA Finals, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors at Oracle. Just a bad game. You know, the final score was 89-83. The Warriors won to stay undefeated at home. Curry got banged up. That was kind of the start of what we've already been seeing with him stepping out for, you know, actually taking two games off and then stepping out early against the Nuggets. So we're not sure what's going on with Curry, but he looked a little dinged from that leg injury. Cleveland just couldn't make any three-point shots. Kevin Love, he rebounded the ball well, but he didn't shoot the ball well. Kyrie looked a little ginger. And LeBron's LeBron. You know, he has those games, those early parts of the game where he struggles, he shoots too many shots, and then when he gets nitty gritty and he knows how to get his points, he just goes after it. And that's what happened. You know, the last 5 or 10 minutes of the game was pretty exciting because both teams were kind of like, okay, we still got hope here. You know, Cleveland at least thought that. And then things got interesting because the game wasn't totally out of reach.
Yeah, but that was just a game like nobody deserved to win. Both teams looked terrible, and it was just a letdown altogether.
And then we had the Lakers and the Clippers, ugly game. That was Kobe's last game. No one really cared that much. The Pelicans and the Heat was probably the best game. That was the first one. That went to overtime. The Miami Heat won that game. I'm trying to remember. The other one was the Bulls and the Thunder, right?
Yes, where yeah. The Thunder just looked awful, and the Bulls looked in disarray, but somehow just pulled it out. And
you see, that's another thing. Like we were talking about with the Rockets and the Spurs. And we said this in the previous episode, is that the Christmas game is, it's fun to watch because it's sort of there, it's sort of the NBA's holiday. But it's just, it is by no means a gauge on what the teams are like. So if you took like a snapshot of the Spurs from that Christmas game, you would think the Spurs were in trouble. But that's what their first loss in like a week and a half, you know. And they haven't lost at home all year long. And they're having a great year. And the Rockets are a mess. The Bulls won that game, but they're kind of on the skids a little bit, at least internally. While the Thunder, even though they lost that game against the Bulls, have played great. They haven't lost a game since that game.
The Thunder, like, I'm not high on them. They just seem like they're just not going to get over the hump. Because, you know, Chicago, they were a good team. Yeah, they have their issues, but just watching them, they just don't seem like they have that power. And it's like, oh, well, their bench is doing good. And if you're relying on Cameron Payne and Deion Waiters to ride through you, I just don't see them. I see them just falling short again.
Yeah, but you can't deny Westbrook and Durant have played out of sight. Durant has bounced back very well from the injuries.
Oh, yeah, he has, but, you know, I think we've, I don't want to say those two can't win together because they could.
They can't do it by themselves.
it's just in any other, you can't just have two backcourt guys and have, you know, Steven Adams play his 20 minutes and Enes Kanter play his 20 minutes and Serge Ibaka hope he does something offensively.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just they're sort of cursed to have the two best players, but they're really sort of the similar player.
Yeah,
they both need the ball. They both,
they get compared a lot to the Shaq Kobe because of how dominant they can be when they're both at their best between Westbrook and Durant. But in terms of position, they're not the same. You know, Westbrook's more of a point guard, a two guard, and Durant's a small forward / power forward, not a center, obviously. But it kind of feels similar in that when they're on and when they're engaged and when the whole team is engaged around them, that team is really, really tough to beat. And they're so spectacular. Like, they get into a mode where, or even for a stretch in a game, where they just blow you out in seconds.
Yeah, they'll just blow you out, but, you know, they'll shoot you in, they'll shoot themselves in the game, they'll also shoot themselves out. It's just, with them, like, they're these two dominant players, but there's no low post game that they could possibly have.
And now Kanter's numbers haven't been terrible. He's actually played pretty well.
His numbers have been great. It's just, you know, you're paying him way too much to play 20 minutes off the bench. And,
yeah,
again, he's only playing 20 minutes.
Yeah, and they're still depending on Morrow again for three-point shooting, which alarms me. You know, and when you have to depend on a reserve guy like that to give you crunch time minutes, it's never good, you know.
You know, everybody's ready to, you know, everybody's calling for the death of the center because, okay, yeah, they're not the 7'2", 300-pound slow guy anymore, but you still need an inside game, and I just don't see Oklahoma City being capable of that.
Okay, and we were talking about New Year's resolutions. Now, this is coming to a resolution, possibly, for Suns head coach Jeff Hornacek, but not of the best kind. Everybody's heard the scuttlebutt with the Phoenix Suns. Things are starting to really... The thing is, the disarray that had been spoken about since the trade deadline moves that they had made last season between then and now, there was a lot of talk about the goings on that the whole team was in disarray and nobody was on the same page. But, and that was fine. But now it's starting to show on the court with an 8-game losing streak. They just gave up 142 points against a Kings team that has been equally as bad. We can go all the way to the beginning with this, but where did it really go wrong with the Phoenix Suns? Because it has gotten ugly fast.
I don't really know where it went wrong. It just, you know, again, like you just mentioned, the rapid spiraling of them is just amazing, but I don't, is it Hornacek? Is it the GM? On paper, everybody loves this team.
Mm-hmm.
On paper, you have a nice young talent. You have a core people. You have, you know, Chandler was supposed to be the anchor. Markieff Morris, he was, you know, not a malcontent. He'd be, you know, the bruiser. And you have the shooters.
Alex Lynn, yeah.
You know, you have all those. But it comes down to just that bizarre trade to get Brandon Knight. And him and Bledsoe, they can't play together. They're the same player.
They played well together for about a month, and things seemed okay. They were at 500. Then in the middle of December, they just started dropping games, just one game after another. And then Eric Bledsoe went out with a torn meniscus in his knee. He's going to be out for the season after surgery. That was a killer, because Eric Bledsoe, after the trade involving Dragic and involving Isaiah Thomas, Bledsoe became the heart and soul of that team in terms of their offensive output. Everything went through him. Now everything's going through Brandon Knight with Bledsoe out. And that's where, I think that's the straw that broke the camel's back, but I'm trying to find the tipping point. Like, where did it really start here with, like, what seed was planted that really made everything go bad?
But the thing with that is, like, both players need the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Neither can just be the off-ball guy. They both need to be the point guard, and they both pretend to be the point guard. And that was just the same thing that, you know, you traded one set of two-point guards for another set of two-point guards. And I don't, you know, Chandler, I don't know how he hasn't, you know, I thought he was just one of those players you could put anywhere.
That is starting to look like one of the worst signings of the season, of the off-season last year. Because of his age and the fact that he's not going to be as effective.
He has a ton of miles on him. I forgot how, you know, how old he is, really.
Mm-hmm. He's in his mid-30s, 33, 34?
I think he's 33, I want to...
Right around there.
He's an old 33.
Yeah.
You know, he came in from 18, so that's just a ton of money. But I was like, okay, he's not a scorer, so he'll get his points. He doesn't fit. He never fit in this, you know, you have Brandon Knight and Eric Bledsoe who are runners, and let's get a slowdown guy with him. It didn't fit. The same thing with Alex Len, and they're basically the same player, and the team just never mishmashed together, and yeah, they sort of started off hot, but you couldn't... The players don't buy into the system because the players don't fit the system.
The system was working, though, the first year under Dragic and Bledsoe. They almost made the playoffs. And then things looked okay before the trade happened in the later part of the 2014-15 season. So, I mean, a lot of stuff kind of led to that. The Markieff Morris stuff is very alarming. I mean, you see a lot of players who are unhappy and do a lot of things to aggravate their coach on purpose and aggravate their team. But Morris has gone basically over the line, throwing a towel in the face of the coach, purposely drawing fouls and doing stupid things so that he could get taken off the court. It's obvious now that a player like Morris has just become, like you said, a malcontent, a cancer.
He's a cancer, and you have no trade value, and it's just a maturity issue, and, you know, we hear the same thing with Cousins up there in Sacramento, and you're not doing yourself, if you want to get traded, you're not doing yourself any favors by, giving yourself no value, and what other, you know, all of a sudden you're going to be good for the next team that takes you? No, not if you're completely display anything. But the thing, you know, I was going to say earlier about Dragic was nobody sort of expected him to rise as fast as he did.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
You know, he had been in the league for...
Yeah, he was with the Rockets, but he wasn't playing great with the Rockets, you know.
Yeah, he never took off. You know, he had his numbers, but he wasn't the go-to guy. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, here he is, he's 20, averaging 20 points, you know, whereas, well, he was just a solid backup. He scored 8 points, there'd be some heat off, sudden 20 points, you know, probably 8 assists. It's like, well, these are superstar numbers, and we gave Bud this money. Okay, well, I guess they really can't. So, they got nothing for him. Oh, and, you know, a first-round pick from Miami in 2020.
They're in a division where, you know, the Clippers play really fast, they're offensively loaded, and the Golden State Warriors are maybe, like, the best offense we've seen in, like, 15 or 20 years in the NBA. But do you think the fact that they're in that division, they were trying to keep up with the Joneses, but they didn't have the horses to do it, do you think that was one of the things that kind of led to their demise when people started all the guards that they had were either sent away or they dropped out due to injury because they weren't going to be able to manufacture that many points? I mean, they got so desperate in one game I saw that they threw in Ronnie Price. You know, now they're having to play a lot of T.J. Warren, who's a second-year player. And T.J. Warren's a really good player that they got out of the draft. Devin Booker is a decent one, too. But, I mean, you can't really run that system, you know, the really fast, low-assist, high-paced type of stuff, you know, with what you have.
Well, that's the difference between playing to the people in your division and then setting the tone. Good teams will be like, you know, Detroit, let's set the pace. We're going to be a defensive team, as opposed to, oh, they're fast, therefore we need to get fast players who might not be a fit. And, you know, obviously you're going to be high on Devin Booker due to his, you know, Kentucky connection. But where did he really fit when you had a ton of, you know, you let Gerald Green go, and Devin Booker, I think, is pretty much the same style player.
Yeah,
he had
true.
Archie Goodwin, who was the three-point shooter who disappeared.
Yeah, he dropped out. And Len came in okay after which one suffered an injury in front of him? I'm already blanking already. Was it Chandler?
Yeah, Chandler got injured. Then Len
yeah, and
came
then
in.
Len came in and played okay.
Then they put Chandler back in, then Len back in, and there's no continuity because if one person struggles for one game, Hornacek's quick to pull him. Mm-hmm. He fired, you know, his two top assistants, and then just watching that Sacramento game.
Now, that's another interesting part of the Politico, I guess. Was it Hornacek that made the firing of those assistants, or was it the organization because they felt like they had to make a move, but they didn't want to give up on the coach yet?
Well, it's sort of the, well, who's the problem here? Are you the problem? No, it's not me. If we just played better defense and we did better practice, you know, like Brian Casey's the hero of having all his assistants fired every other year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, well, you're not the problem, are you? No. Everybody, the players like me. It's mm-hmm. just the systems, and he's the systems guy. Okay, then, you know, you just pass the blame off.
Well, here's the thing. We know how this is going to end if they keep going down like this. Hornacek's going to get fired. But now that you've fired your top assistants, who's going to be the interim?
Well, that's why they're basically... Having an interim coach is just pointless. Because, you know, how many interim coaches do get the job in the end?
It's not working out at all for
it's very, you know,
staff.
You know, Larry O'Brien and Frank Vogel were like two of the assistants who... It's very rare because the person has his own set of things. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, sometimes maybe... You know, I don't want to be a coach because, you know, coaches are not our YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And with this, you know, all the players totally buy into them, just this little piece that's missing. Okay, well, we're going to keep, because, you know, you're not going to get a marquee coach. You're not going to get somebody mid-season.
Yeah.
Like, let's say you're going to go after Thibodeau or some coaching guy.
They're already in their cushy jobs, whether it be a desk job, like a analyst job or color commentary, or just kind of, like, resting their laurels. Like, they don't want to just jump in January or February and take on a sinking ship.
Well, they're probably already under contract for the... You know, for the entire season. And number two, why get a half a team that's going to be probably blown up? I mean, how many new coaches come in and say, I want to keep this team as is? Usually, immediately, there's a trade or a cut, or I'm going to get, you know, I'm signed this player who doesn't fit, you know, things that have been currently, you know, closer. And I get that mid-season sort of, you know, power. So why, as we know, I think has a history of cheap ownership. Mm-hmm. Selling their first round pick, and they could, you know, could have had Luol Deng and Rondo,
yeah.
had they not been cheap. Mm-hmm. So why pay somebody, you know, $2 million to leave to get somebody who, you know, probably won't be as good as if you wait till next year?
And the difference between, like, when they signed Steve Nash and when they got Charles Barkley, which really turned around that franchise in both of those eras, they just don't have the appeal to bring in a superstar player, whether it be their relationship with the coach or maybe a previous relationship with the region. They're not able to do that where they could get a LeBron James or they could get a Blake Griffin or they could get a LaMarcus Aldridge. You know, they tried, but, you know, it was going to be unreasonable for them to do that. And, I mean, I don't know what kind of position they could put themselves in to where they can convince a superstar player, you know, in the next two off seasons that this is the place to be. We'll give you whatever max contract you want, and we'll revolve it around you, and you'll be successful in a Western Conference that's, I don't want to say loaded anymore, I almost said the word, but I would say highly passionate.
Well, you also, you know, you hit the hammer on the head. Where did this all start? When they made that attempt for Aldridge, which you knew was a long shot when you're basing it on, well, Tyson Chandler is, you know, our key piece to getting you to come to us.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to really get anybody. And also, with this TV deal, everybody has the same max space. You have the rumors that, you know, the Warriors could potentially have enough money to go after Kevin Durant. Then if they have the money, everybody else has the money. There are 29 teams minus Brooklyn. Oh, they will because they lose Joe Johnson.
Mm.
There's 29 teams that could sign, you know, Durant without a problem. So what makes Phoenix, you know, there's no such thing as a good free agent destination anymore. Everybody has the money.
Mm-hmm.
It's only a good destination for the mediocre place. That mediocre mixture, like the O.J. Mayo's, the Amir Johnson's.
Now it's probably the $12 million a year.
Exactly. Yeah. Now you go to that's the destination because, okay, we now have money to get the second and third spot. If you're going to the superstar, don't be the long shot odds and talk yourself into it. Because they failed. They really, you know, have no future now thanks to Morris. See, he killed their entire inside game.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's just all you could do is sort of wait up the draft, hope you could, you know, get a seal.
finish, me a team that's sort of on the same trajectory as in her initial set do to not repeat the set the Suns made?
Right now, one would be the Washington Wizards. They need to get rid of Whitman.
Okay.
Because they haven't been in the playoff, the highly, you know, competitive East. Mm-hmm. It just shows the lazy way in the playoffs, and you're lazy, you know, you have Bradley Beal, what are you going to do with him? Are you going to max him out? You have this, like, Oubre, Otto Porter, who's going to be good, who isn't?
Yeah.
You know, you have Gortat with his Player of the Week.
I can't believe Mark Gortat won the Eastern Conference Player of the Christmas. That made me laugh, because when you read the stat lines, it's like 17-10, 25-7, and 12-16. It's like, yeah, that's Marcus Hudson's numbers every night. You know, it kind of shocked me when I saw that. But, you know, that's just the nerd in me who watches the weekly and monthly lines of who wins some accomplishments. When I saw Marcin Gortat saying, like, what? You know, I was shocked.
And another one, this might surprise you. Another team should be very sort of cautious. I think the Milwaukee.
Okay. Are they still being coached by Joe Prunty right now with Jason Kidd's back problems?
I don't know what's going on with them. Because, mm-hmm. you know, you just said, you just beat me to it, Kidd's going to be out, you have a new coach. They seem to be playing a little better for him. There seems to be a little, you know, I saw a little more cohesion, but there's lots of, again, there's tons of pieces that don't fit. And then if you start getting some, because, you know, they had high expectations and, by all accounts, this is a lost season for them. You could either turn it into a building season or just a panic attempt of we need to get back to the, you know, the 8th seed. And
yeah, this is the new Eastern Conference. Since we're in the new year, that we could kind of refocus on this. The Eastern Conference is no longer in a position where if you have a losing record, you're going to make the playoffs, and maybe you'll have enough pride to make something out of it, even if you're 5 or 8 games under 500. That is not going to happen this year, Adam. You've got to be over 500 to get to the playoffs this year.
That's basically... that used to be the stomping grounds. Oh, we'll just pound on the East, and there's nobody good there. And
now, I'm not saying the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference is going to be this very, really excellent team, but what I'm saying is if you think you're going to have, like, by most definition, a lost season and still make the playoffs as the last spot just because everybody behind you lost games or fell apart, it's not going to happen this year. Right now, it's the Celtics at 18-15. The Detroit Pistons, who, by all accounts, have had a very good year with Andre Drummond and Reggie Jackson, they're right behind them. And then there's the Charlotte Hornets, the Wizards, like you just said. The Bucks are done. I could almost say the Bucks are done.
Well, you know, you had just mentioned it from, you know, Toronto at number 2 to Washington, who's 11th right now. Only 5.5 games separate 2 to 11.
Yeah, in that grouping, yes.
And Washington is the only team who's below 500. We could say Charlotte's 10 and above 500, and that could change at any time. And there's no, like, oh, we could easily stomp on the Magic. Mm-hmm. You know, the Hawks are elite. No, there's just a lot of better teams now. And then, you know, at the same time, you go out to the West, you have, right now, Utah is the number 7 seed.
That's my team in that comparison with the Suns. I think that Utah needs to just stay the course with Kevin O'Connor as the GM. Just do what you've been doing. Don't make the hasty move, which is what the Suns did. Don't make a trade thinking, oh, well, we're going to get this star player, and we can just have him fit into what Quinn Snyder's doing. Don't do it. Just keep with what you're doing. I know they've had a lot of injuries with Rudy Gobert and Alan Burks, who got injured again. Derek Favors had to miss a game or two. But they're still playing well. They're still winning games. They're still toughing things out. Their defense has been pretty good. I would not make the same mistake that Phoenix did and go big move.
I disagree. Normally, when you're just a trade Burke, and oh, no, you know, that are only real. I especially think you're going to have to make a move. As much as, you know, Derek Favors, Haywood, Gobert, I think you need to move one piece and improve on it. I just don't see those three being the corners I'm to. Maybe you stay the core next year, you get Exum back, and, you know, mm-hmm. it'll be neat.
Yeah, but they're still pretty good. Like, we're in the playoffs. The Rockets are unbelievable. This might make playoffs. They make the playoffs. Destroyed by either San Antonio or Golden State. Would you agree?
We'll get destroyed by anybody. And just, you know, the top, even the Clippers, you know, extremely Jekyll and Hyde they are right now. Mm-hmm. They're still... You expect them to pull out in the playoffs because they're sort of built for is we're just going to maintain our health until then.
Yeah, the Grizzlies are barely hanging on. The Mavericks dropped a couple of games, but they're still overachieving, and watch out, the Clippers have won 6 games in a row.
Well, okay, do you think the Grizzlies are going to pull it out and write the ship, or do you think it's finally done? And they should?
I think it's over. I think it's over. I think they're going to blow this up if they go on like a 5 or 6 game losing streak.
That's a different topic for different people. We'll have one day, you know, figure out a way to deconstruct.
There are so many moving parts involved. If they really do go forward and just kind of like make the big wholesale changes, like trading Zdenoff and, you know, finding they're not going to sign another contract, so they trade him away, firing Jorger. There's so many different moving parts of that I think we need to have probably a more comprehensive base to speak about that, because just a lot of stuff there. And the Grizzlies' situation is complex because how few together that team is, that if you put it out, the whole thing doesn't work. You know, that's what makes kind of in or out.
Okay,
so they swift or they blow it up.
So, quite a good topic in a different. Who the one person you build, you keep in?
Patty Paul, of course. I mean, because of the max contract you have, what he can supply when he plays well. The one thing that alarms me about Gasol, though, and we saw this before he even signed the max deal, is that he has a couple of games where he goes for, like, what, 9 points and 6 rebounds? He has some games where he just no-shows. Or he's more defensively minded, and he's not in as much as maybe Mike Conley is. I want to call Mike Conley indispensable, though.
That my question is one of those who, you know, keep it.
I do Marc Gasol.
Different topic for a different day. So,
the Philadelphia Sixers made a move involving my New Orleans Pelicans. They traded they made a trade where they get Smith from us. Who's actually, in terms of like speed, all the 25 different metrics. And all, I read this one. It's a national metric, Adam, on ESPN. It's called Real Defensive Plusness, which is like always factor in rebounding, instead of like saying, well, DeAndre Jordan's a great defender because he rebounds a lot. So they decided to do this one called Real Defense Minus, and I think the leader in that category is Dunk. But that's just one stupid metric. Another dumb metric is the fastest player statistically in the NBA. And it's just like one of the fastest in the NBA. Went to Sixers, and the Sixers gave up 2 second-round picks for a guy who is not on a guaranteed contract. So what does this say about Philadelphia 76ers with Jerry Colangelo? Is this sort of a readjustment? Is this the beginning of the readjustment phase, or...?
This is, you know, it's just how is this too? They traded for some, you know, garbage veteran guy who, you know, they gave us around pitch art, you know, essentially kind of worthless. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the 76ers bought anybody in 3 years, and to trade 2 picks for somebody who can leave at the end of the year is the exact opposite of Sam Hinkie. So the rumblings of Colangelo, you know, took over, and D'Antoni comes in, and you know, oh no, it's still the same team. It's still Hinkie's team. And then why are you trading 4 people all of a sudden? And you hear the players are like, this is great. We want this. And just a side note, have you been reading how everybody is just selling hard on Okafor now?
Well, I had heard on Twitter last night that Jahlil Okafor's dad was yelling at Brett Brown from the sideline. I don't know if you've ever seen like an interview with Jahlil Okafor and his family. He went through a rough one where he lost his mom too soon. But man, Okafor's dad, he's a big guy. He was an ex-player himself, and he's a bit of a loudmouth himself. But yeah, Okafor's stock has dropped a little bit. His rebounding is still, I mean, Russell Westbrook averages almost as many rebounds as Jahlil Okafor, am I right? Somewhere we're hovering around 7 or 8.
Yeah, well, we know his defense is completely horrible, but just, you know, as the only good player on that team, because I sort of think, well, Pete, a slowly father, I think he'd be expect him to be, and, you know.
And then there's Embiid, and you just don't know what's going to happen with Embiid.
It's just like, well, you know, if it's a draft and you put in this, you know, why are you drafting, why couldn't you draft better players, as you've seen, you know, there's a lot, you know, the team they could have drafted and could have had, as opposed to the one they do have, is a lot of, like, well, even just second-round picks.
The problem with the Sixers is that, you know, for most awful teams, I'll specifically note the Sonics / Thunder, you know, when they were really, really bad, right before the 2009-10 season when Durant won the scoring title and they suddenly became a playoff team, you know, alongside Westbrook and Harden. But before that, they had some guys that were kind of stick-arounds, like Nick Collison and I'm kind of blanking out. Royal Ivy. Rudenauer. Guys who had stuck around, and they wound up playing decent minutes right at the beginning of their success. Do you see any of these guys outside of Okafor and Noel that will be around for the Sixers when they actually become successful? Because the road to success for them is so long. That's my problem.
Well, it was funny, you know, in our previews, you had mentioned, like, you know, Troy Roden was going to be one of the high points of the season. They cut him on Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, they, you know, they've shown no value to their players. It was just, you know, they had, who was it, KJ?
McDaniels. Yeah, McDaniels.
And then he was having a good season. Let's trade him immediately for whatever we could get for him.
They were playing way too much of T.J. McConnell, who wasn't ready. I saw Rashawn Holmes in a highlight, which means that he's playing too many minutes, because Rashawn Holmes is, to be fair, not an NBA player, you know? And then the only guy who I think I've seen that I think is going to stick around with the Sixers if they wound up becoming successful down the road is Jeremy Grant. I think that's the one guy that I think that really can give them value down the road. And I don't know about Nick Stauskas. He's averaging 7 points, 2 rebounds, less than 2 assists. His shooting overall has been
he's
average.
Just looked equally as bad, and that the thing is, like, you know, what was Sacramento doing getting rid of him? And it's just like, well, they're on a terrible team. Now's your time to get those Kevin Love just terrible stats and just be like, well, he's putting up 25 a game, but well, yeah, and he can't even do that. He's not even getting on the court. You know,
I know you're saying Noel is maxed out, but if you're maxing out and you're averaging more than a block and more than a steal per game in your NBA career, that's pretty good.
It's pretty good, but, you know, as good as a defensive player you are, you're not gonna, you need that, you know, like Bismack Biyombo is doing wonderful in Toronto because he's just asked only to rebound and block.
Yeah, they just had a game with Charlotte where it seemed to me like Biyombo was out to get Charlotte. Like, look, what you missed out on me.
And the thing is, you know, like we with Tyson Chandler, yeah, you're great, but you need people around you who are going to score. As it is, you know, right now, today, you know, newly traded Ish Smith is leading the 76ers in assists. You know, and it's just, you're getting it, and he, you know, Noel's given you 8 rebounds and 10 points. Is that just what he's going to give you, 10 and 10?
Yeah, well, on 50% field goal percentage, which means that it can improve if he becomes more aggressive on the offensive end, but the problem is, when is that going to happen? You know, I mean, Okafor is already more aggressive in the paint than he is. Offensively.
Point guard, you know, it's one of those, will he be better with a point guard, maybe? Mm-hmm. If they had somebody on the team who's better, but it's just, again, like you said, if you have T.J. McConnell passing to you, well, then, you know, again, Ish Smith is leading the team with 6 assists.
Now, Robert Covington had that great game where they beat the Lakers and he had 8 steals. So there's that.
Yeah, there's nobody on the team who's doing anything. So, you know, like we mentioned, are you sort of sad to see this? Let's be as bad as we possibly can to get these picks, or?
Well, let me ask you this. With Colangelo coming in, is there any kind of difference in the progress of the team that you've seen in the last few months? Now, they've had a couple of wins. They beat the Suns on the road. They beat the Kings on the road. That's more road wins than they had at any point in November or December. So, those games were in December, but they were at the very, very end. So, do you see any kind of anything that's changed in the team at all?
Yes, I see a slowly different style. You know, it's sort of the, you know, Brett Brown, okay, nobody's watching, nobody cares. Do whatever you want. You have your, you know, your Spurs lineage. Go run your system. Then all of a sudden, you know, Kalina comes in. The team played a little faster.
Mm-hmm.
A little more like, okay, now we sort of want to play, now that the players can, I guess, sort of see, like, look, there, people are going to, you know, they might start trying soon. Because now it's just pure purgatory, where even players just know, like, well, I'm in the NBA. Because who's really under contract on that team, period, who's not on a rookie contract? I don't even know.
Let me give you 3 kinds of bad, and you tell me which one is the worst sort of situation. The Sixers tank type of bad, or the Lakers tank type of bad. The bad kind of like the Brooklyn Nets, where they win a game every week, like maybe one game a week, but at the end of the day, they wind up being a 20 to 25 win team at the end. Or the team that has really high expectations, like the Rockets and the Pelicans, and they come crashing down. Which one's the worst type to have?
The worst type of bad, I think, is the one you didn't mention, which is the Sacramento dysfunction type of bad.
Okay.
The, you just, every year you sort of botch the, you know, Minnesota, you botch the draft, you get, you know, Johnny Flynn instead of Stephen Curry, and you get, you know, Wesley Johnson as opposed to Cousins.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Sacramento, well, okay, you draft McLemore because you need a shooting guard. Then you draft Stauskas as the same position and then develop sort of neither of them. And every year, and then just, you know, the dysfunction sort of grows.
Yeah.
Like, at least with Minnesota, it's, they just sort of have a logjam of mediocre developed players. Mm-hmm. Like, you can see them going, but it's like, okay, you have Dang, you have Nemanja Bjelica, you have... All
yeah, the Wolves at the end of the day had a pretty rough December. I think they only had like 3 or 4 wins. So things are already kind of going downward for those, for the Timberwolves in terms of this season. So those, that talk that they might be a playoff team is kind of dead.
Well, that was just, they were just, you know, height on the unfortunate path. It's not as just they were doing better than the sort of expected. Then, well, now these kids are, you know, young and rookies.
Balancing and, out, yeah.
Yeah. Then you'll have, you know, Shabazz Muhammad decides for a game. Levine will show up for a game. And the only, you know, Rudy.
Yeah.
He's, you know, his.
He had an 8 steal game earlier this season, too. You know, he's a guy in terms of the and his sister killer. He had this one where he gave an alley to Levine where he looked like he's coming down. You know? I mean, they got talent there. You know?
They got talent. It's just, you know, like we had seen with Orlando 2 years ago. It's like, okay, they're 2 years away. Once they get a little more seasoning and they understand, you know, you have Wiggins, who's. You know, people are selling on him, too. It's like, you're like, oh, he's overrated. He's not going to be the next anything.
I think one thing that happened is that when Kevin Martin came from injury, they sort of force-fed him to be so good at getting the free throw line. He's only good three-point shooters, even though they don't shoot threes at all. So I guess they just wanted to implement him, which took away some more offensive looks from Wiggins. That's my theory.
I think my theory is Wiggins is that dominant, that, you know, that alpha Kobe Bryant, I'm going to just destroy everybody type.
He's a great sidekick?
Yes. You have him at Towns, who sort of, I don't know whether he's decided he's a sidekick or a leader yet.
He's close, though. He's yeah.
You know, Arnett's trying to push him. He's, you know, I see the nuances, and he's sitting.
Here's my counterpoint with you about the Sacramento Kings dysfunction. Because you get the Chicago Bulls or the LA Clippers and beat dysfunctional team, type of bad team, and be really, really good. But what matters if you're winning games? So when things start to support, like the Phoenix Suns are really unwrapped.
Well, you know, things start to unravel, and you have Cousins, who is just being wasted up there now.
Mm-hmm.
His talent is just, his tantrums are because of the lack of sort of, you know, we met him here, they've had Jason Thompson on the roster because, well, there's, he's mediocre, and he's there, and there's nothing better, and everything you sort of try is good, but it's not fitting, and then you keep on going, I don't know how many, just, you know, he's had now.
When we talk BC, West Ham, back to Martin. Wait, I got it the wrong way around. This is incredible podcasting, correcting myself over and over again. West Ham. Or Westfall, huh? Westfall. You see, I always mixed up Westfall and Westhead, even though they're like, the coach is like, hard, you know? Westhead was the guy who did Loyola Marymount and won the title with the Lakers in 8. And Westfall is who played with the Suns and he coached Charles Barkley in the early 90s, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Westfall, Keith Smart, Mike Malone, Ty Corbin, George Charles. It's 5 of them.
It's 5 of them, and he's been in the league for 6 years now?
Yeah,
you know, that's the thing, how you develop a system, and you can even say, no, yeah, this coach is just meaningless and doomless, and, you know, unless it's a high-profile fire, like, Phoenix, they just come and go, nobody notices. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can't get a system, and you put everything around them, and you have a, you know, players mature, and you put just random pieces around them. I think that's the worst of that, just, you know, that one superstar with no future realm, and, you know, you can see Carl's trying to win. They've definitely overachieved with him, I think, this year, as, you know, he's trying to get the two by him and Rondo's been great with, you know.
He's been great, but, you know, we've already talked about the issues had, you know, in terms of him being his demeanor and his character. I mean, that's never going to change. And so I think Rondo's telling him to take with the bad. So he's playing out his mind, you know, and he's kind of playing spectacularly, you know, but he's doing it on a team that he knows isn't going anywhere. So if he makes a stupid mistake, he knows he's not getting yanked.
So first of all, it's just a team that squanders everything. Is going that way in a year or two if they continue to draft badly. Any team that's going to be good, as you've seen, has multiple. Oklahoma City, you know, Durant was a 2 pick, Westbrook was a 1 pick, Harden was another.
Harden was 3. Yeah.
We have that. You saw with Orlando, okay, they have a shit ton of just lottery picks. Same thing with Utah, and you've been better, and you need picks that fit and are going to grow, and you can't just a pick, and then, okay, we got Dallas, and then who's 8th, I think?
Yeah.
And you've done that for a year. And then on team or two, equally as bad, which shows, like, well, he was just a wicked pick, John Flynn.
And I want to give up on him too early, but Willie Cauley-Stein has not, I mean, he's had an injury already, but I wasn't really seeing much out of him early. He was good with steals and block swings defensively. He had a lot of potential, which is really where his effectiveness was, but offensively, obviously, he's there yet.
Well, you don't need him.
He's got a ways to go.
You don't need him offensively if you're just putting him next to Cousins. He's just there to be the safety net and just to be the anchor so Cousins can go do his thing.
Yeah, and to be the dunk, you know, he gets dunked on.
Yeah, and then that's the same thing with Nolan, is what is their ceiling? Cauley-Stein's going to be good. Because all he's just going to do is shift that rebounder and blocker, and people are, you know, they're valuable. But what is their sling going to be, especially, you know, once he starts, you know, big men are a little slower to develop, like, parts. Once Cousins only has a few years in his prime, and once those injuries start, man, he'll be happy.
Yeah, that's why I think he's open the three-point shot. He's kind of get away from it, he doesn't have to take as much of a beating. You know, Dwight Howard's a good point. I think physically he's broken down. And we talked about this in a previous episode.
It seems like a lot of our points are referencing old episodes. But you want to be longevity since you came in at 19. You know, it used to be, okay, you're at 21, 22, your prime was 27, 28, 29, and then your 30s were downside. Now your downside is before you hit 30, so.
This is an end podcast, so we have to talk about the Warriors, right? Just for like 5 minutes.
Well, we talked about the 76ers, so it's only fair, right?
More best. Okay, Steph Curry had a bit of like a lower, it was like a calf injury. I don't know if he like kind of like got a Charlie horse or whatever it was, some kind of a leg problem, a lower area. He goes to the locker room. He comes right back. He doesn't play great against the Cavs, but they win the game anyway. He gets hot late. He plays against the Kings. They win the game because the Warriors and the Kings. It's just the truth. Then he takes off the Mavericks game on the road with left leg injury. The Warriors don't just lose, though. They get blown out by the Dallas Mavericks. J.J. Barea, they lose by about 5 or 20 points. They go to Houston, and they beat Houston. The Rockets are a dumpster fire. I don't really know what to gauge from when, you know, Klay Thompson had a 38-point game. Draymond Green has been on his mind back-to-back troubles. Had to go to, and then Curry's back against Nuggets, and he gets a leg contusion, and he goes right back out. There's two worries here. Biggest one is Curry's health. You don't think hurt. And that kind of leads to another point I want to talk about in a second. But the other thing is, how good are the Warriors really without Curry? That's the big one.
We had mentioned that during the win streak, is who can go out, and it's like, well, Klay Thompson goes out, yeah, they will win, but both wins now. And if it was Curry, their team, you're not going to get the same production from Sean Livingston
Yeah. I think there's two indispensable players on the team. Obviously, Curry, who they've lost so much during their team, Draymond.
Well, Draymond Green's just playing out of his mind, but he can replace Iguodala.
I don't agree. I think Green allows them to do defensively that Iguodala just can't
do. But if you have Iguodala, Harris, Barnes, the drop off isn't as steep as Curry to no Curry. As you mentioned, you know, okay, you beat Houston, but Houston doesn't know what they're doing. They didn't really beat Houston convincingly and destroyed them.
No, it was
It was just the people go as Curry goes, and we kept mentioning. It's like, well, you're hitting all your shots. Yeah, now you seem unstoppable because Curry's on fire. Curry's a bad game. Oh, well, the game's mysteriously close.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing that I don't understand, writers, is that, well, I would make Steph Curry the most improved player. And I'm not saying that I'm disagreeing with the point, because I think it actually is a decent point that Curry, in terms of his like his advanced statistics and his efficiency and his scoring output, it's increased mightily over his MVP season. Here's where I have a problem with that. I have a problem with the idea that that's supposed to be a good thing. The fact that Curry has to do more individually for his team is a positive for the team, because it really isn't. That means you're relying too much on one guy.
That just goes back to the Bulls Jordan level of...
Yeah, and if you notice those three piece, it the dependency they had on Michael increased from title one to title three in both of those stretches. And it wasn't a good thing. It got to the point where 98, if Michael had a bad game, the Bulls
exactly,
would win.
Exactly, and you could sort of see that with, you know, Green and then Thompson are going to have to work twice as hard just to make for a bad game Curry. And, Thompson has been, I don't say he's been consistent this year, but yes, considering the West has fallen off tremendously.
Draymond Green is a lot, all-star. Period, end of story. Curry, too. Just don't know about Tom. I don't think Iguodala is all-star.
No, of course not. But who would you put with a... Who's a better shooting guard right now in the West? Who's their, you know...
Just the West.
And, you know, him getting voted in. Who get over him? Who else? Westbrook's good.
Harden.
Hey, those are...
You can say Harden. Because we're in an era where point guards are two guards now, and they all work seamlessly.
The only one who can essentially knock him off, I think, is CJ McCollum.
Okay, I'm
not going who's left in the West. You have all the guards that are going to make the All-Star. He's forward, and I wouldn't even say he's a second hit.
But Jazz weird. They put him in situation, comes off of picks, and he seems like he plays the guard spot, and then they kind of strolls where he goes back to the forward spot. It's kind of the new NBA where they like the position basketball, you know.
So does Rondo make it this year?
I would have put him in just on the assist numbers.
Okay,
someone's gonna step through the injury because we all know that January is the month where everybody sort of rests. They're kind of like just R&R, just like you and I have with the holidays and everybody else over on their vacation. Oh, but you're ready to get back to work. Probably the major superstars, I don't think they're ready to get back. I think they kind of time themselves based on the month of January. Curry has, like Bond did last year, where they just sort of say, you know what, I'm just going to kind of take it easy. And the ones that don't take it easy are the ones that are in positions with their teams in terms of win-loss record, where they have push in order the season will be lost.
Well, that's either the injury or, you know, turmoil or something, you know, something has drastically changed. Because there's 20, just learning your system, learning your rotation, learning how many minutes you're going to get, learning where you fit in, who you playing with. Am I going to have a lot of minutes split in the first and second unit? Am I going to be playing small ball, my big ball? And then, you know, like we mentioned, Christmas Day is the time where you put everything together. That is just sort of autopilot for till February. Of we know our rotation, we know it.
It's February is when things pick up.
Let's
right before the All-Star
break. To this point.
Yeah, because right before the All-Star break is the midway point of the season. And that's when you can start picking things up. So, but in January, it wouldn't shock me if Curry's about maybe 5 games to see this month.
He should start taking some time off because, you know, they had really used him a ton in the first, you know, the win streak. Not really necessary, but, you know, if you're going to stay healthy for the playoffs where you're going to have to go through Oklahoma and LA, those will probably be the 1-2 and probably 4 seed.
How many games does Golden State lose this month? What's your over-under? Like 3?
2 or 3.
I would say 3, maybe 4.
It just depends who they're... I don't know, you know, I don't have the schedule in front of me. It could be... They have pancakes of, you know, they back the Lakers, and then... But
Let me grab it for you really, really quickly while you help me stall.
But the thing is, like, you know, I just mentioned, you know, you spend all your time getting to the point of now you know it, so now it says, let's just go to work, let's stay healthy, let's keep practicing our system, which we now should have down, unless you're the Knicks who are still like, we don't get the triangle, we're too busy trying to run the triangle to play basketball.
This is their month of January remaining. Hornets, at Lakers, at Blazers, at Kings. Miami, they go to Denver to play the Nuggets. They play the Lakers at home on TNT. Then they go on a 3-game road trip where they go to Detroit, Cleveland, and Chicago.
See, so that should be 3 losses probably.
Then they have a 3-game homestand, but it's against the Pacers, the Spurs on the 25th, and the Mavericks on ESPN. Then they finish their D-League schedule at Philadelphia and at the New York Knicks.
Yeah, that's the week you give Curry off.
But yeah, that, you know, they got the Pacers, Spurs, and Mavericks on the 22nd, 25th, and 27th, and then they have an East Coast road or the Midwest road trip where they go to Detroit, Cleveland, and the Bulls. And LeBron's gonna have revenge on his mind on TNT when they play again after the Christmas Day game.
Oh, it's at Cleveland. You said it's at Miami.
Miami's
a home game.
Yeah, but the Spurs are a home game, but the Spurs are, I don't know, they're going to get up for that game. I would say the Warriors will. That'll be a Curry special.
It'll be a Curry special, but it's going to be, you know, whoever they play after that game, they're probably going to get destroyed because they're just going to be spent.
That's like, the Mavericks again, but that's...
Yeah, like how Milwaukee just came in and mopped the floor with them.
Exactly.
You know, it's not an easy month for them, but, you know, injuries are piling up, and, you know, Harris Barnes has been out, and, you know, he's not the most, you know, invaluable, but, you know, there's a drop, they have their 8-9-man rotation, and once those guys go, you have nobody behind them.
Is it possible we've seen the last of Jarrett Jack?
Where's he at now?
Well, he's in Brooklyn, but he got a nasty knee injury against the Celtics. He's in his 11th season, or maybe his 12th. Do you think we've seen the last of them?
Probably not.
You know, yeah, I always liked Jarrett Jack. You know, I mean, he played for us in New Orleans.
He was just the random backup point guard, and he'll be the third string point guard on some team, some sort of veteran guy who's there. But as far as a contributor, no, he wasn't really. He really shouldn't have been much now, and I don't know how.
But my friend Norman always makes the joke. He says like he's the kind of guy that is terrible for like 10 or 12 games, and then he has that one great game that where you're like, man, if we didn't have Jared Jack, we would have lost that one. We were in the playoffs against the Lakers, the Hornets were, the New Orleans Hornets. That was the kind of game that Jared Jack had, where if we didn't have him, we would have lost, you know?
It's sort of like Mo Williams, how he was. It's just like, well, he's there, then he'll have that one game where he will win it for you, and it's like, okay, now we get why we pay him $5 million.
And we're going to be kind of wrapping this up with the schedule. In Toronto at Cleveland. Oh, by the way, Kansas plays Oklahoma in a number one versus number two game in college.
Yeah.
That's going to be the same time as Toronto and Cleveland in the queue.
The Sheik Diallo train has sure sailed on Kansas, hasn't it?
Well, I was watching them, and man, they're so good offensively. And Oklahoma is too. They had a great game against another offensively talented team out of the Big 12, Iowa State, which was Fred Hoiberg's old team. They got some good offensive teams out in the Big 12. We'll see who knuckles up in that game, one versus two. I only bring that up on this side because we're college fans, and one versus two does not happen often. I think the last time it happened was when Trey Burke and Tim Hardaway Jr.'s Michigan Wolverines went to Bloomington, and they played Indiana when they had Cody Zeller and Victor Oladipo.
Well, it doesn't happen often, and also, these are future NBA picks that, you know, you just met, you know, Oladipo, Zeller, and Trey Burke. Okay, yeah, they're going to be on, you know.
Here's the funny part with Kansas. I don't think they have any NBA players.
No,
I don't know if Chick Diallo is one. I don't think Perry Ellis is an NBA player. I don't think Carlton Bragg is going to be an NBA player. If they do, they're going to be, like, kind of just, at best, reserves. Buddy Hield is an NBA player at Oklahoma. Absolutely.
Well, Diallo is another, you know, he will take a year or two to get some seasoning and learn how to run it. But you can see, like, he has moments, but it's just when they're just quick, sparse moments and he'll be better. You know, he's also, the thing with Kansas is they're the Michigan State of the year of just having a very senior-laden team.
Yeah, well, Valentine got the knee injury, but so they dropped the game, but he'll be back soon. But that's probably, I'll probably be watching college instead of the NBA on Monday, but Toronto at Cleveland, that's a nice matchup. Orlando at Detroit, San Antonio goes to Milwaukee, we'll see if Milwaukee can do a double-decker there. They're the ones that ended the Warriors' winning streak. We'll see if they can get a win off of San Antonio on Tuesday. I don't really see much there. It's the Knicks. Wednesday, the Knicks again on national television time against the Miami Heat in Miami. Indiana at Orlando.
No.
Detroit at Boston. The Bruins are finding out at win loss wise. So we'll see what's going on there. On ESPN, Mets at Oklahoma City. Los Angeles goes to Portland on a night game. Thursday, Boston at Chicago.
No, just take the week off.
That's on TNT. The Lakers are on TNT again. Adam, how does this keep happening with the fucking Lakers?
Oh, Lakers on TNT Friday. They're on ESPN. It's Oklahoma City.
Oh, God. Oh, and did you see the last two games that Oklahoma City played LA? They won by a combined, I think, 90 points. Or maybe 60 points.
It's just, first you have Minnesota, and then the Lakers on
Friday.
Well,
Minnesota on ESPN is rare, so maybe I'll watch that. Well, maybe they'll get up for that, kind of like when New Orleans played Cleveland.
Just take the week off. Watch college. You know, just
this is an NBA team podcast telling people, do not watch the NBA.
Well, not every week can be a week, and not everybody like us who will sit down and watch just bad basketball to see, you know, what Trey can do, if he has anything, or, you know, what's Jakar Sampson doing for Philly? Is he going to make, you know, is he going to get some burn? Mm-hmm. So, not, you know, people just want to watch good basketball, and this is the week of, you know, two Lakers games on TV.
Yeah, I mean, even for the optimist and the NBA optimist to me, I'm looking at some of these ones, like, that all the combinations of game they have, and they just, I'm coming up snake eyes on a lot of them, unfortunately, this week.
Some weeks are just, you have every day with something great, and some weeks it's just like, well, if you want to, you know, not take a break, you can, because not every week is a victory.
Well, what's your favorite stretch? Like, 1 week in the regular season, or maybe a memory that you have. Like, what was your favorite? Is it usually the last week of the regular season, or is it some other time?
It's usually, for me, it's right after the trade deadline, because it's all new, you know, you have...
Like the beginning of March, at the end of February?
Everything is just shaken up, and it's just, well, you know, this team imploded, this team just got this superstar, can he fit with them? And it's watching, it's something different, as opposed to, I've been watching the team all year, I've been keeping up with them, how are they going to be with this new piece? It's something, yeah. It's intriguing, it's different.
I don't remember what week it was, but it was the week where Kyrie scored 57 on the Spurs. I remember that week being a very vibrant week in terms of movement up and down the rankings and the standings. And that's the most important month of the week of the season, where it's like where teams are in a pivotal point and they either go forward or they tank, you know. And I remember that week being kind of a pivotal week for the NBA teams.
Yeah, because you know, usually like the last week of the season, it's just you're jockeying for the garbage positions, and you never really have the who's going to be number one and who's number two. It's just usually like, you know, who's going to be first round fodder and.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's been sort of a letdown the last week of the season, the last few times. It's like, well, oh, there's, you know, like even last year, oh, there's four teams that are going to make it. But it's like, yeah, those teams are going to be blown out and nobody has it.
And remember, you're still competing against the college football playoff, which unbelievably won't be until, what, January 12th when Clemson plays Alabama?
You can't have it, you know, 2 days later.
But Jesus Christ, you could have had it a week later. Instead of 9 days later or 11 days later, that's unbelievable to me.
Well, that's just pure TV scheduling.
Yeah, well, the rating. Well, I don't know if they're going to do it on New Year's Eve again, because the ratings for the New Year's Eve games were pitiful compared to last year.
Well, also, were the games really that great, and it's the semifinals, which people don't...
Yeah, but Florida State got clowned by Oregon, and everybody watched that, too.
Oregon got clowned by TCU at the end.
Well, they didn't get clowned. They were clowning them, and then they got clowned.
Yes, they did.
That was a gigantic choke job by Oregon. Here's the thing about the other bowl games, and not even the New Year's Six bowl games. Like, the smaller ones, like LSU was in the Texas Bowl, and Oregon was in the Alamo Bowl with TCU. Some of the, they're not the most important games ever, but there is something to be taken away from it.
It's just something. It's like, you know, if it weren't a bowl game, nobody would care about it, period.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are two random teams that have no history, and nobody, you know, really cares much. It's just, oh, it's a bowl. It's at a neutral venue. It's something different. But, you know, for the most part, like, you know, the semifinals, I had, you know, been telling you, like, the entire time, like, well, these are both going to be blowouts. They're not going to be close. You could definitely tell both, you know.
Yeah, I had my hopes up for a competitive playoff like last season. Because Ohio, well, I mean, Florida State, Oregon wasn't that competitive. Alabama, Ohio State was in the Sugar Bowl was a classic, you know. But those are rare. I've realized now, as we get to our second college football playoff, that those kind of games are rare. They don't happen every year.
Yeah, and, you know. Also, there were a lot of, you know, miscellaneous games on New Year's, and then you're going against, you know, the hockey, their marquee game of their outdoor game.
The Winter Classic, yeah, with the Canadiens and the Bruins it was.
Yeah, this year, yeah.
But, man, the New Year's Day bowl games, my God, they were so bad. I almost wanted to watch NBA basketball, which, I mean, January 1st NBA basketball sucks. Cause everybody's hungover and nobody's really playing well. And there's not many games anyway.
And that's the thing is, like, it's like a fake holiday because everybody's home, you know, it's on a weekday, everybody's home because they have it off, but there's no reason to be home. And, like, the afternoon, you're like, well, I'm bored, let's go out.
Do you ever have holiday guilt? Like, I should be at work, but I'm not?
Well, in the industry of TV, there's no such thing as holidays.
Mm-hmm.
If you're watching, you know, the bowl game, there are people working that bowl game. You're watching any TV station. As long as that station's on, there's people there. It's just like a hospital or anything else that needs to stay open. There's no such thing as, like, I don't get holidays off. I just have my 2 days off, whatever days those happen to be.
We're going to reconvene before the national title game, but let's just go ahead and get out of the way now. Who you got?
I told you Alabama months ago. When we, you know, we're getting down to the conference championship, I'm like, they have that ground and pound they're just going to wear out Clemson, which...
I don't think they're 2011... I don't think this is as good as the 2011-2012 defense.
They're not as good.
That defense was like all-time 2001 Miami, mid-90s Nebraska great, where you could not score on them. This team has got a great defense, a really great defense, but I can't say all-time great. But, man, they are hard to score on. They put a donut on Michigan State.
Well, yeah, and then I can't think of his name, but the pass rusher from Clemson's going to be out.
Shaq Lawson?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So your best defensive guy is out. All you need to do is just keep running it the entire game. It's going to, you know, an unsexy...
My problem with Clemson is that I don't know what they're really good at, but I know they're good. I just watched them put a whooping on Oklahoma, but I don't know what they're good at. You know, it's kind of like... I'm trying to think of a good comparison. It's kind of like those Washington teams when Don James was there. I don't know what they're really good at. You know, they're just kind of good at everything. You know what I'm saying?
They're just that athletic team.
Yeah.
They have that SEC speed, mm-hmm. where it's just like out of nowhere. Oh, they just scored. Well, where did that come from?
Yeah.
And then it's just bland, bland, bland. Quick. They have the quick play that you don't see coming. There's no, you know, they don't have that, oh, where the passing system or the running system. It's just they have their plays that come out of nowhere, and I think that's sort of their thing.
Can we name an NBA player from Alabama? Any kind of player.
NBA player from Alabama, the state or the college?
The college.
What was Richard Hendricks, Alonzo Gee, Gerald Wallace?
Those are the first names you thought of?
Yeah.
Antonio McDice.
Well, I try to mention players who are current.
Latrell Sprewell, Robert Horry. Actually, Sprewell and Horry played on the same team.
Sprewell, I forget about. He's one of those players, sort of like, you know, like, did you know Ish Smith went to Wake Forest? It's like, no.
Yeah.
I sort of.
This was a little harder. Clemson.
Players from Clemson.
I'll give you a hint.
Master of the McDaniel.
Okay, I'll give you another one. Master of the Granny Shot, Mr. Granny Shot. He did the granny. He plays for the Jazz, and he did the granny shot.
He did the granny shot. Plays for the Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of
Trevor Booker.
Trevor Booker.
You remember when he took the bounce pass and he kind of did the reverse granny shot?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't know he went to Clemson.
He went to Clemson. The only small-time one, or maybe an older player I can remember, was Larry Nance and Horace Grant. They played at Clemson. And Eldon Campbell and Dale Davis. Chris Criscola will remind you of that every day, because UConn beat Clemson on a heave by Tate George. And Eldon Campbell and Dale Davis were on that team.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's about as much interest as all the viewers or the listeners have right now with our non-NBA version of the NBA.
I mean, if they've made it this far into it, you know, they've had the first 30 seconds.
If you made it this far, we're very, very proud of you. You don't have to scroll that, you know, you don't have to scroll back. You're in the extra version. But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reese.